Thank you for joining us today at the Thai Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I think you just appreciate kind of the steps you take, the progress you make. Like once you get there, it's probably going to be a sweeter feeling, I guess, more satisfying.
Seeing guys that were on that team start to have success and feel like you're not quite in that spot where you probably expect yourself to be, you know, mentally speaking, how do you continue to move through a period like that?
Yeah, it was just like one of those weeks where you're just like in the zone and nothing really bothers you, nothing really distracts you, and you're just kind of in the moment. So that's something I'm trying to do the rest of the year, no matter how I'm playing.
Long time coming. Happy to have you here. Thank you for joining me today. How's it going?
I'm doing great. It is a pleasure to be on this show. I've been waiting for the invite, Jim. So thank you.
It's time. I'm fired up to chat. Before we get into the episode, let's hit the dirt. Isaiah, what have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking lately?
Huh. Like all of those in that order?
In that order. I can remind you if you need me to. Start with the drinking.
Okay, I've been drinking. I've been drinking a lot of this, just like some protein shakes, as you would appreciate. I've been laying off the booze. I'm trying to not drink at all during tournament weeks, unless I win, which I would do after. Eating. I mean, I try to cook mostly when I'm home. I've been cooking. I've been into orzo recently. Yeah, just orzo with like a creamy tomato orzo with like chicken thighs or like shrimp. I took a lot of salmon. I mean, I just cook simple stuff. I've been reading quite a bit of popular fiction, big pop fiction guy recently. I'm currently reading Project Hail Mary, which was a suggestion from our good friend Bradley Knox. And that was suggested to him by our good friend Brandon Wu. So just working up the chain.
We've got like the Stanford Golf Book Club going here. I think I might have to take inspiration and read that one as well.
Project Hail Mary, it's very sciencey, Shemp. Very sciencey.
Well, we're science, technology, and society majors.
That's true.
Right up our alley.
That is true. It's a shame I don't know all of the science lingo in that book. Is just going straight over my head, unfortunately. But it's a good book. I've been reading, just other fiction. I read Demon Copperhead recently. It's a good book. Open to more wrecks. All right.
Thinking. What have you been thinking about?
I try not to think too much about like the golf related stuff, but it's hard not to. I was recently trying to think of like, or I was thinking of just kind of what went right, like in Panama a couple weeks ago, like what really happened. It was just like one of those weeks where you're just like in the zone and nothing really bothers you, nothing really distracts you, and you're just kind of in the moment. So that's something I'm trying to do the rest of the year, no matter how I'm playing, just like try to not get too emotional, which is something I did last year for sure.
Cool. You mentioned in the drinking, we're not drinking during tournament weeks, but you did follow that up with saying, hey, if you catch a dub, then there will be some drinks. You just mentioned Panama, what you were thinking down there, and you did catch a dub in Panama, mind you, by 8 shots. I would imagine yes. There were a few beverages. What does one get into in Panama after an 8-shot win on the Corn Ferry Tour?
So we were lucky that like Jackie was there and our good friends, Catherine and Luis, who you know, Champ, right?
Yep.
From Stanford. Luis, his family, he's from Panama, and his family makes the Ron Abuelo rum, which sponsors the event. So, like, they were taking care of us the whole week, taking us to, like, nice restaurants, played in the Pro-Am with them. But, yeah, like I said, I didn't drink at all during the tournament week, despite many opportunities. And then, yeah, after the win, we just – we obviously like stayed at the course for a bit, and like you kind of just hang around there, have some drinks with like the Corn Ferry staff, and the people at the course. And then, yeah, we just had a nice dinner in Old Town, Panama City, which is a really nice little part of town by the water, kind of old, like historic vibes. So we had, but like modern restaurants. So we had a nice, very nice dinner with just all kinds of drinks because Luis's dad knew like the restaurant owner or whatever. So we hooked it up fat. And what did we do? Then we went to a rooftop bar after that and just like shut it down at like 1 a.m. It actually wasn't that like eventful. We just like met up with some other players and just hit a rooftop bar and just had a few drinks. So
good stuff. I see the whoop on your wrist. What sort of recovery were you gaining the day after a dub?
I think it was like 2%.
Okay. So you shut it down early enough, but you didn't not get after it, I think is a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah.
Okay. One final thing before we hop into some real questions here. In the typical American vernacular, I think you hear a lot of Panama. I hear you saying Panama. Is Panama the way to say
sorry.
It?
Sorry. Should be Panama.
Panama.
Panama. Yeah.
Panama. Okay. Okay.
That's how good. You should say it. That's how it should be said.
Cool. Okay. Well, I want to start here by kind of setting the table on kind of the career synopsis for you. I'll start it off here with kind of the end of your amateur career, and then I want you to pick it up kind of starting with COVID when things got pretty wild for everybody. So, and correct me here if my memory serves me incorrectly. I'm trying to just go off memory here. So 2018, you win the Pacific Coast Amateur at Olympic Club. You make a run all the way to the semifinals of the U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach. Fast forwarding to 2019, you win the Western Intercollegiate at Paso Tiempo, followed by a regional victory in NCAAs, which rides straight into a team victory at the NCAA Championship. Capping off that summer with a win with the U.S. Walker Cup team, being the capstone of your amateur career, you turn professional and then win the McKenzie Tour Q School, giving you full status for 2020 on the McKenzie Tour. And then we introduce the Coco. No McKenzie Tour, no real status to speak of. So taking it from there, walk us all the way up to where we are now. You know, just 2 weeks ago, 8-shot win on the Corn Ferry Tour, and kind of what those 3.5 years have looked like for you.
Yeah, well, 2020 was obviously a wash. Like you said, the Coco just ruined things. So yeah, 2020, I really didn't play in any tournaments aside from like they did this local IQ series, which was like kind of like a 6-tournament. Just like series towards the end of the year, but those were all on the East Coast and in the Southeast. So like I was still in California at the time. So I only played like 2 of those because we were playing for like no money. So yeah, 2020, I just kind of chilled, didn't do much. 2021, Canada, we're supposed to be in Canada, but COVID still was an issue there, obviously. I'm trying to get this right. 2020 was 2021 the Form Tour, or was that 22? Yeah. 2021 was the Forum Tour, which is they brought the basically the Canadian tour. They kind of combined a couple tours and just brought it to the States. So I played, you know, whatever that year, played, you know, kind of mediocre, but kept my status for the following year, which is when we finally played in Canada. And then, yeah, didn't, again, just kind of mediocre golf, kept my status. Canada was kind of a nightmare, especially with travel that year, just getting delayed, like going across the country, losing airlines, losing your clubs, just all that good stuff. So yeah, 2022 was Canada, played not good, kept my status. And then finally got through Q school in 2022, end of 2022. I got conditional status through final stage. And yeah, made finally, you know, got Korn Ferry status for last year and made my first start in Bogota last year, and finished like 12th or something there, and reshuffled me in for the rest of the year pretty much. So yeah, played pretty much a full season last year on Korn Ferry, but again, didn't really play up to expectations, I guess. Just had, you know, a few good finishes, but narrowly missed out on the tour championship last year. So I went back to Q school after the season just to try to improve my status, and did that through final stage. So I had full status going into this year. And then, yeah, had to skip the Bahamas this year. I don't know if you knew, but yeah, had my appendix removed like right before New Year's. So skipped the Bahamas and made my debut in Panama, and then caught a dub. So here we are.
A lot in there. I did hear about,
yeah,
the appendix.
Was a lot.
What is that? What did that look like? Do you just like have a few days where your insides are killing you, and finally you go to the doctor and they're like, this thing,
yeah,
has to come
it
out?
It was less than a few days. It was really like overnight in like one day. So I went to bed one night and had like just some stomach pain, and I thought it was just a stomach ache, but you know, thought I had to go to the bathroom or something, but that didn't work. So I just slept on it, and it was not getting better. Woke up the next morning, and it was just like slowly getting worse. It's kind of all over. And then was like on the phone with an advice nurse, and like once the pain started like kind of centralized, like in the right lower right part abdomen, that's when I knew like, oh shit, this is probably bad. So go to the ER, and I'm waiting in the ER, and it's just like getting worse. I'm just like, holy shit, I think this is gonna burst. Like I literally had to tell the lady at the front, like, I need to fucking see a doctor like right now. So I'm in pain, and then get called in, and yeah, get a CAT scan and everything, and it's appendicitis. So they just had to remove it, which they did that day, and went home that night, and it wasn't too bad. I mean, it was like for a few days after, it was obviously kind of bad, but I was like fully back like 2 weeks after the surgery. I was hitting balls again, and like starting to work out again. So turned out being fine. I just had to skip the Bahamas.
Yeah. So taking a step backwards, you know, you kind of rolled right through that whole 3 year period there as if it's just like one thing to the next. But one of the things I'm curious about, you know, we talked about the Walker Cup, and I mean, if you look at it year over kind of the last 15, 20 years, like set aside the guy or two that maybe are never going to turn pro or whatever the situation may be. I mean, most of the guys who end up making a Walker Cup team, you know, the odds are pretty high that there's going to be some professional success. What was it like for you over those 3 years to, it's not that you're not making any progress by any means, but having some tough breaks like the McKinsey tour and all of the craziness that happens with COVID, seeing guys that were on that team start to have success and feel like you're not quite in that spot where you probably expect yourself to be, you know, mentally speaking, how do you continue to move through a period like that?
Good question. It was tough at times for sure. Because you're always keeping track of your buddies and like the guys you've played with. My teammates on the Walker Cup. And yeah, I think there was a point in time where I was like, I think I may have been the only guy who didn't have like corn at least Korn Ferry status. Like from that team, I think. I might be wrong about that,
I've
but
taken tabs on it, but I'm not going to call out any names of guys who have struggled necessarily.
I mean, mine is obviously
But
Big
that's
Stu,
close to
who,
the case, yeah.
yeah, I think it was, there's just like one point in time where I think that was the case. And, but yeah, I try not to think about it like that. Like, 'cause you can just get so, you just get so down on yourself and negative if you're just comparing yourself to other people. And like, if you're thinking about like where you should be versus like where you're going. That was kind of a big thing for me because I always knew, like, I really always knew, like, once I get to Korn Ferry, like, I'll be fine. I know I'll be fine. I just need like a full season somewhere, and then I'll be able to, work my way up to the big tour. But it was just for like I just couldn't. I was like 0 for 3, I think, starting out going through Q school, getting to final stage. So I think, yeah. So, just had to be patient. I mean, and just had to be patient and try not to always compare myself to others because that can just put you in a bad place.
Is there anything positive? Well, I'm sure there are many positives. Is there anything negative, I guess, is a much better way to situate it in, because what we haven't touched on is in that whole period, like you qualify for the 2022 US Open. You competed, let's see, fall of 23 and competed really well in the PGA Tour event in Vegas. You finished tied seventh, am I correct there? You were right up there at the lead after three rounds, a lot of great golf there. So yeah, is there anything like negative to some of those experiences of like clearly proving to yourself like not only am I good enough to be on the Korn Ferry Tour, I'm good enough to be a level above that, but like status is status. Is there some frustration that comes with some of those successes as well?
For sure. If you thinking about that way, I guess, yeah, I mean, at least going back a little, like a few years, I did play in some tour events out of school and, made some cuts, but, didn't do anything good enough to kind of get any sort of status out there or on Korn Ferry. So, yeah, I guess, I mean, I look at it more just as a positive, though. I mean, anytime you have those kinds of results in a tour event, I think it's very, very reassuring. And, at least last year, when at least for Shriners last year, like I already had Korn Ferry status kind of locked up in a way. So, I wasn't thinking at all about, that got me into the next event in Cabo, but I wasn't really thinking at all about, trying to parlay that into, getting tour status right away, because that's pretty rare. But yeah, it's good to have those results, just to kind of, it's good for your confidence and helping you, letting you know that you're good enough to compete out there.
Is there anything in specific you would call out game-wise or just like simply being a professional that you've taken away from Form Tour, being in the McKinsey Tour, being on the Korn Ferry Tour, kind of all this craziness that travel or craziness of the travel and all that comes with playing in different tours as opposed to maybe just kind of making it straight out onto the tour like you'll see some guys do, few guys do, but
What have I learned?
what have you learned? Yeah, having a little bit more of a meandersome path to this point as opposed to just something that's quite logical.
I guess like obviously everyone's path is different, but I think there is some value to, kind of grinding through the developmental tours, and you're not maybe not playing the best courses, and the travel can suck, but I think it makes you a little bit tougher. Like being able to play in like on any conditions, on any course. So I think that gives me maybe a slight advantage, like, you know, being able to play. I played in Canada, I played, you know, a couple events in Latin America. So yeah, I think just being able to play like all kinds of courses and just learning how to, just getting more like tournament experience is really helpful, like when you first turn pro, no matter where it is. Because it's definitely a big adjustment, you know, for most people, and definitely was for me. So yeah, I think you just appreciate kind of the steps you take, the progress you make. Like once you get there, it's probably going to be a, you know, a sweeter feeling, I guess, more satisfying.
Yeah. I think you're a really good guy to ask this question too. Like I hear this dialogue quite a bit, that be it the Corn Ferry Tour or the Latino America Tour, so a lot of these developmental tours, the golf course quality, as you hit on there, maybe isn't the best for identifying the top players. Mentally yeah. speaking, as someone that's probably highly cognizant of that, of like, hey, you could probably rock up to a US Open and do quite well relative to certain guys who are playing Corn Ferry, but the Corn Ferry events may or may not identify yeah. you as well as others. Do you, yeah. Are you able to just say like, you know what, screw that, like I'm going to beat you anyway? Or is there some frustration there? What is kind of the internal dialogue look like around that?
I'm definitely aware of it. You know, last year playing like full season on the Corn Ferry Tour, you definitely see some courses that are just like, God, like literally anyone can play. You're like, fuck, Shemp, you could play on this golf course and like make
easy.
A cut.
Not, I don't know about that.
Fucking Chris Myers could fucking, you know, show up and maybe make a cut out there. But yeah, you just have to play good no matter what the court. Like if it's a 6 under cut, it's a 6 under cut. You just have to play good. So I try to, I obviously prefer the tougher courses. Like Panama was, you know, obviously a tougher course scoring wise. And there's a few of them out here that we play on the Corn Ferry Tour, but yeah, I'd say the majority of them are just kind of courses where like a lot of people can compete and potentially win. But you just have to kind of rise above that and just play good golf no matter where it is.
I mean, you've won plenty of events before. When you get into contention in Panama, you start to separate a little bit. Did that feel any different than, you know, winning the Pac Coast Amateur, or winning in college and all of those different experiences, being that there is a little bit more pressure with regard to status and those things? Or do you just start to separate, kind of keep playing and just do like you've done in the past?
Yeah, I'd like to say that I, you know, was able to draw on like past experience, but like it had been so long since I'd won a tournament that I was just like, it didn't feel like new to me, but it was kind of like, yeah, I just had to kind of stick to the process and like keep doing what I was doing. I was trying not to overthink it. I didn't look at any leaderboards on Sunday. And I mean, I looked at the leaderboard after 10 and I had a 1 shot lead and then separated myself on 11 and 12 and then didn't look at another leaderboard until 18 green. So I just, from like 13 to 18, I was just telling myself like, you know, I knew that I had a decent cushion and all I had to do was probably just make pars and just hit good shots. And that's what I did. I really wasn't firing at pins. I was just playing it like not conservative, but just, you know, just trying to hit greens and make sure I make pars. And then it was nice to finish with a birdie on 18, but that wasn't necessarily part of the plan.
Because they don't post the meticulous statistics on the Corn Ferry Tour, I wasn't able to really dig into it. What about your game was really great that week versus, you know, a week that you finished 17th?
Yeah, I just striped it for 72 holes, Shemp. Just absolutely striped it.
Did you roll the pill a little bit as well? I mean, if you didn't putt great and still went 28, that's pretty good.
No, I rolled the pill for sure. I mean, I think I missed a couple putts inside of like 5 feet because at some point, like some of the greens were a little sketch. But yeah, I made some nice putts. Like I was pretty solid inside of 10, 12 feet and then made a couple bombs. But yeah, my ball striking was just on. Like usually for a 4-round tournament, you usually have one day where it's just like not there, and you kind of have to grind out like a 2 under par round or like an even par round or something. But I just hit it so good all 4 days somehow. I don't know how, but and then just was able to make some putts too. So.
Yeah. You mentioned our good friend Bradley Knox before and his book recommendations. Bradley's also carried for you a few times on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yes.
And I've gotten to speak with him about those experiences and kind of what your game looks like. And so based on that, and also just like, know what your game is like, I know that relative to the Korn Ferry Tour, you're in the top whatever small percentage ball striking wise. Putting probably fluctuates a little bit more week to week, but I'm curious, when you've played US Opens, PGA Tour events, how do you feel like you stack up in kind of the core pieces of the game, and how does that make you think about the next handful of years as you have the goal to get out there, and what needs to get better and what needs to maintain for you to be, from
Yeah.
where you are to call it a top 50 player in the world?
Yeah. I think from my experience, like all the tour guys I played with, statistically looking at it, I think my ball striking is just right on par, if not, probably above average on tour, I'd say. Just tee to green, I think I'm very confident in my game tee to green. I think that probably the two things I have to improve on are just like a little bit of course management stuff. Sometimes just getting too aggressive and just making like just dumb mistakes, making dumb bogeys. And so it'd probably be that. And then also just kind of the short game and putting. I think my short game's improved a lot over the last, since I've turned pro. I used to think that my short game was good. And then, you start playing with like guys on tour and you see how good their short games are. So I knew I had to improve that part of my game, and I think I have quite a bit. And yeah, just trying to get the putting a little more consistent to just to be able to, compete like more consistently every week. If my putting's pretty good, no matter how I hit it, I feel like I can hang around. So those are the kind of the two things I'd say.
After winning, you still have not the full season, obviously, but a large percentage of the Korn Ferry season ahead of you. We spoke about it briefly before we started here, but how does your mindset change on the Korn Ferry Tour for this season, having a win under your belt, knowing kind of where that starts to move you towards? What's the goal kind of going into every week and just as the season goes on after a win versus before one?
Yeah, that's something I've thought about too, and I don't think anything really changes. Like, my goal before the year was obviously to win a tournament and just to be in contention as much as I can on the weekend. And it's nice to obviously do that in Panama and get the win, but I'm just trying to do that as many weeks as I can out here. And if I win again, great. If not, that's fine too. If I can just, continue to put myself like in position on the weekend, then I think it'll take care of itself.
So before I want to get into a couple things non-golf oriented here on the back end, but I like to think through kind of 3, 5, 7, 10, whatever year goals. Let's do 3, 5, 10. Where would you like to see yourself in 3, 5, and 10 years? That can be something hyper specific, like I would love to have won this event. That can be just kind of where you're at. All of the above, or one or two of the above. Where do you see yourself in a few years?
Interesting. I never really, I don't think about that much. But in 3 years, I'd obviously love to be like kind of hopefully established like on tour, like full status on tour, playing in, most of the events. Hopefully a win under my belt on tour, and then eventually in like 5 years playing in all of the majors and hopefully a major winner at in 5 years. I think that's the goal. Definitely that I think about a little bit, but not much. I'm just trying to obviously take it one step at a time, make sure I get there first. But yeah, probably starts with a tour win and then playing in the majors, competing in majors, and then eventually winning a major.
And now a quick word from our friends at Good Walk Coffee.
Dude, I've been getting a lot of questions recently about the magical fruit.
Big blueberry?
Nope, I'm talking beans here. Coffee beans.
What do people want to know?
Where to get a steal on quality beans shipped to their doorstep? Do you have anything?
Absolutely. A company called Good Walk Coffee, based in California, roasted in North Carolina. Great beans, nice people, excellent variety.
Are they a steal though? People want value.
Oh, I got the steal for you. Use code the tie, that is THETIE, at checkout for 20% off any order.
So that puts us around $1 per day for 2 cups of quality coffee. That's below market price for quality beans. Where can I send them?
That's exactly right. Send them to goodwalkcoffee.com. Tell them the Tie Guy sent you. Once again, that is code the tie, THETIE, 20% off any order at goodwalkcoffee.com. So I'm kind of messing with you here, but at the same time, not. You say on tour, no specification of PGA versus LIV. In all seriousness, what is the conversation on the Korn Ferry Tour around PGA versus LIV? Like, do guys seem to be halfway interested in each of them, or what? Like, we constantly hear from PGA Tour guys what they think of LIV, and we, clearly hear from some LIV guys, but it doesn't really make its way down into the slightly lower ranks of the professional games. Like, what is your take on LIV, and is there really any dialogue out on the Korn Ferry about just what's going on in kind of the top levels of the professional game?
I do not have a super strong opinion on LIV in terms of like how it was created, how it was formed. I don't have any problem with guys who obviously go play there. I think every golfer has the right to kind of choose where they want to play. That's the nice thing about pro golf. It's not like other sports, like team sports, where you don't choose where you play really. So I think that's the nice part about, it's created some competition and options for guys. But I have no real preference, to be honest. I mean, it all depends on what happens in the next couple of years with, whether they merge or, this new tour, I forget the name of the group that like bought it, or
Strategic Sports Group, like the partnership with PGA. Yeah.
yes. So giving equity to the players, I think that's nice. But yeah, I mean, we'll see it. We don't really talk about it much on the Korn Ferry Tour, to be honest. I don't, well, that's not really something that comes up a lot. I don't, not many guys are really talking about LIV or really saying like, oh, I just want to go to LIV. I haven't heard that a lot. It's mostly just we're just trying to get to the tour and then see what happens.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's I wanted to talk about something you mentioned. You're eating. You said that you've gotten more into cooking, and when you're out on tour, you like to keep things pretty clean. Walk me through, well, I two things. One, walk me through a week on the Korn Ferry Tour, who you're staying with. Like, do you stay with a caddy? Do you stay with some friends on tour? And then kind of what the weekly nutrition is out on the Korn Ferry. I guess I'm particularly interested when it comes to like a week in Panama, where I've heard a lot of the horror stories when guys go down to Central and South America. Are you pretty conscious about trying to keep things fairly consistent and dialed in?
Yes, but not like I'm not that I guess scared of trying things like in Panama. So typical week, I mean, I'm either staying in an Airbnb with other guys, a hotel, sometimes I'll share with another player, or host housing. which is nice that the tour provides host housing at a lot of these tournaments. Like a family will like take you in or whatever for the week. And yeah, unless I'm in an Airbnb, like I won't cook at all during the tournament week. And I'll just try and find, you know, somewhat healthy options. If I'm in the States, I'll just absolutely hammer Chipotle and like Cava. Just absolutely hammer it. And yeah, I'll go out for like, you know, a nice dinner or two with some other players, or find a nice restaurant in town. I try to try new things in each town, like try to get the local flavor of each town. But yeah, like in South America, I just, you know, you're obviously careful with the water, but that's really about it. Like I'll eat anything down there if it looks good or tastes good. I haven't, luckily so far, I haven't had any serious issues with like food, but yeah, I'll try anything. I'm not that scared. Some guys will just eat at the hotel like every single night. Like some guys did that in Panama, and I'm like, that's pathetic.
Yeah, that's tough. When you're back home in Vegas, for you, is cooking kind of like a little bit of mental release? Like, do you like to try out different things? Do you have just like a few go-tos that you stick to? Like, and how would you describe yourself as a chef?
Very simple, very simple. I do like to try new things, like new recipes that I'll find like on Instagram. That's huge for me. I'll just save stuff that I see on Instagram. But yeah, it's pretty simple. Like, yeah, I guess I have like a few staples, I guess, that I can always whip up real quick, but, yeah, it's not, I don't like, yeah, but like you said, it's a pretty good mental release at the end of the day, just to kind of wind down and just like make something of your own that you will enjoy. So, I still do like to eat out at times with other people, but, if I'm just having dinner by myself, I'd way rather just cook something. But
what's a recipe you've done recently that you've enjoyed? Something you found on Instagram or wherever?
I made some, like some chicken, like some baked, like lemon garlic chicken thighs, like marinated some chicken thighs with a bunch of like lemon juice, olive oil, garlic, like red pepper flakes. I put a little hot honey on it. Yeah, just bake that up. And then, the hard part for me is like putting together like meals, like what you want to eat with it, whether it's like what kind of vegetable you want, what kind of, you know, carb, like if you want it with rice or like noodle, like pasta or like a salad or whatever. That's the hard part for me, is figuring out like what I'm going to put with the protein. But
what are your go-to? Because for me, it's always kind of the same. It's like, I might do something like you described, like a chicken of sorts. And then you're going to have to figure out like, okay, well, what's going to be the carb source, the vegetable? What for you, typically, what is like the process of deciding on things there? Is it like protein, then carb, then vegetable? Or how do you kind of sort through all of that?
Yeah, I probably start with the protein. And then depending on like the flavor of it, then I'll decide like what kind of vegetable and like how I'm going to cook the vegetable. So like I made like salmon like last week, and I did like a Dijon like air fried salmon. And I was like, all right, I like Brussels sprouts with salmon. So I'll cook some Brussels sprouts, and I'll do like lemon. I did like lemon and like soy sauce kind of with the Brussels sprouts. And then I paired it with just like white rice. Sometimes I'll do like cauliflower rice if I want to like get more veg. But yeah, I guess we'll start with the protein and then just figure out what I like with that and then go from there.
Good stuff. All right. Last question. I apologize that I'm going here, but I do want to hear your take. Lifelong Niners guy living in Vegas. It is what it is.
I'm out.
There he goes.
Fuck this.
Give me your quick breakdown on the game. Like, what went right? What went wrong? How'd you feel throughout? What did you think about playing against Mahomes? Where are we at?
I felt surprisingly like confident going into the game because I thought we were the better team. I thought it would all depend on our defense, and our defense played really good for three quarters. And we were in control of the game. We should have had a bigger lead. At halftime, you know, the fumble and the penalties in the first half were tough, but I still felt good going into the second half. And then our offense just stalled. And then you just keep Mahomes in the game, and that's going to happen. Like, I, as the game went on, I kind of knew that that's where it was going to go because we just couldn't score a touchdown. We scored one touchdown in the second half, but you have to put them away with touchdowns because our defense did a pretty good job overall. So I put it more on the coaches. I put it more on Shanahan, and they fired Wilkes, which is a tough break for him, but probably the right move. And yeah, I was just severely depressed after the game. I put a little money on it. Not that that matters, but yeah, it's every year they do this to me every year. So I've told people I'm going to give them one more year next year, and then I'm going to completely like disassociate myself from the team because I care.
You can get on the Panthers train. We're, you know, but you buying low as shit. I mean, we're looking for fans. Maybe you're a Dave Tepper guy. I mean, I think Tepper's become awfully popular throughout the league. So it's a great time to hop on the Panthers train.
I'd rather not.
Being in Vegas, did you watch at home? I'm guessing that, you know, the Panama winnings probably didn't go straight to Super Bowl tickets. That's, you know, I would have probably done away with all the winnings.
No, I did not buy a ticket to the game. I don't like watching Niners games like in public with a lot of people. I like to watch by myself or with like a few people. So I went over to a friend's house who's also a Niners fan. And it was literally just like, there were like five of us there and we were just dialed in, locked in. But yeah, it would have been a hell of a night if they won because it was going to be quite a celebration. But yeah, that didn't happen. So we'll see if they ever win in my lifetime.
Hey, on to the next. Panthers, like I said, buy low. We're looking for people. Isaiah, a lot of fun. Appreciate you coming on today, breaking down the win, breaking down the Corn Ferry season, and a lot to look forward to. So big year ahead for sure.
Thank you, brother. Enjoyed it. Thank you. Thanks for having me.